This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine waking up in the middle of winter, like dead of winter, and you find out your smart thermostat has completely malfunctioned.
Oh, that is the worst.
Right. It glitched, it shut down your whole heating system, and now your pipes are frozen. It's this incredibly frustrating, super expensive mess.
Yeah, absolute nightmare.
But here's the question. Under European Union law, does that glitch make your thermostat a high-risk artificial intelligence system?
Well, surprisingly, the answer there is usually no.
Exactly. But now imagine that exact same smart thermostat glitches, and instead of just shutting off the heat, it overrides the safety valve on your gas furnace, and that causes a carbon monoxide leak.
Which is terrifying, and legally a completely different ballgame.
Suddenly, the European Union is looking at that exact same piece of hardware, the same code, and classifying the AI inside it as strictly high risk, which triggers this massive wave of mandatory audits and regulations.
Right, because it completely changes the regulatory reality for the manufacturer, and it's based entirely on the mechanism of failure. I mean, we are looking at a system that doesn't care whether you call your software AI or machine learning or just a fancy algorithm.
It just cares about what happens in the real world.
Exactly. It cares about the physical consequences of that software.
So today, we're unpacking exactly how the European Union plans to draw that line. We are diving into how they actually decide which AI systems get slapped with that high-risk label and which ones just get a free pass to hit the market without, you know, heavy government oversight.
It's a really complex line to draw.
It really is. And we are basing this deep dive on a highly detailed report and commentary provided to us by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
Which is incredibly helpful material.
So helpful. It offers this surgical look into the mechanics of EU regulation, taking these incredibly dense legal frameworks and translating them into the actual practical compliance reality for tech companies.
Yeah, and right off the bat, I need to make something crystal clear for you listening. To be precise about our focus, the material provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim centers on the Annex I section, which is the safety components part of the draft commission guidelines.
Right, for the high-risk AI classification.
Exactly, under Article 6 of the EU AI Act. But, and this is important, I must state clearly that this is a non-binding draft.
Yeah. It's a draft document.
Yeah, it's dated May 2026, and it's intended for stakeholder consultation, so it is not finalized law. However, it operates as the most definitive, crystal clear roadmap we currently have for understanding how the European Commission actually intends to enforce these rules.
Okay, let's unpack this. So if my smart thermostat isn't automatically a high-risk system just because it uses machine learning, what is the underlying philosophy here? Like, it seems like they aren't just dropping a giant net over the entire tech industry.
They absolutely aren't. And honestly, understanding that is the key to parsing this entire framework. The EU AI Act operates on this strict risk-based approach.
Meaning they're categorizing things based on the danger they pose.
Right. The regulators looked at the landscape and realized, you know, regulating artificial intelligence as this single monolithic entity is practically impossible. And it would be economically destructive.
Right, you'd crush innovation.
Exactly. So instead, Article 6, Paragraph 1 of the Act takes a very targeted approach. It specifically focuses on AI systems that impact the safety of products already regulated by existing EU harmonization laws.
Okay, wait, when you say harmonization laws, for the listener, we're talking about the rules that allow a product to be sold across all 27 member states,
yeah.
Right? Like the baseline safety rules.
Yeah, exactly. The EU has this massive, sprawling catalog of existing laws covering physical products. Things like heavy machinery, toys, medical devices, civil aviation equipment.
Lifts and elevators, right?
Yes, lifts, pressure equipment, all of it. These are products that, by their very nature, can cause serious physical harm if they fail.
You don't want an elevator running beta software.
Exactly. So the EU's goal with the AI Act is proportionality. They want to prevent a scenario where a newly integrated piece of machine learning suddenly makes an industrial elevator unsafe. But they want to do it without burdening low-risk AI, like a basic customer service chatbot, with all that unnecessary red tape.
So how do they legally bridge that gap? I mean, how does a piece of code inside a physical machine actually get flagged as high risk?
Well, the draft guidelines outline that for an AI system to be classified as high risk under this specific section of the law, it has to meet two strict cumulative conditions.
Cumulative meaning you need both.
Right. If you don't meet both, you are not high risk under Article 6, Paragraph 1. So the first condition is that the AI system must either be the regulated product itself, or it must be intended to be a safety component of that regulated product.
Okay, and the second condition?
The second condition looks at the product as a whole. That product must require a third-party conformity assessment under those existing harmonization laws before it can even be placed on the market.
Okay, it's like getting into a highly exclusive, heavily guarded vault.
That's a good way to put it.
You don't just need the key, which is being a safety component. You also need the biometric scan, which is the third-party assessment, to actually trigger the high-risk alarms.
Exactly. You need both to get in.
But just to push back a little, or to test the boundaries of this, the material from lawyer Kyungjin Kim makes a point to note that these rules apply regardless of whether the product is for professional or consumer use.
That's true.
So does that mean a smart washing machine sitting in, like, a suburban laundry room could theoretically be regulated under the exact same stringent AI framework as a massive robotic welding arm in a car factory?
I mean, theoretically, yes. The statutory definitions do not discriminate based on the end user environment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the law evaluates the risk profile. It doesn't care whether it's in a factory or a kitchen. If a consumer product meets both of those cumulative conditions, acting as a safety component and requiring a third-party audit, then it is high risk.
But practically speaking?
Practically speaking, the guidelines acknowledge that most consumer AI will fail to meet these hurdles. A smart washing machine is rarely acting as a life-saving safety component, you know? Nor does it typically trigger the strict external audits required for industrial heavy machinery.
Yeah, that makes sense. The barrier to entry for the high-risk category is actually quite high, which naturally brings us to defining that first condition. Because if the manufacturer's AI isn't considered a safety component, the high-risk label simply doesn't stick at all.
Right, and they can essentially bypass this entire tier of regulation.
So does the AI Act rely on older laws to define what a safety component even is?
It actually does not. And this is a critical legal maneuver by the European Commission. Article 3.14 of the AI Act establishes an entirely independent definition of a safety component.
Independent meaning it ignores the old definitions.
Yes. This new definition actively overrides any legacy sector-specific definitions that might exist in older EU directives.
Why would they do that?
The Commission did this to guarantee uniform interpretation across every single industry. I mean, you can't have the aviation sector defining safety differently than the medical device sector when it comes to the baseline application of the AI Act.
Right. That would be a nightmare to enforce. So how does this independent definition actually work in practice? The guidelines break it down into two distinct pathways for an AI to be deemed a safety component, right?
Yes. And the first is what we can call the safety function pathway. And this pathway is entirely intent-based.
Intent-based.
Yeah, it relies entirely on the provider's intended purpose for the AI system.
Meaning the regulators are looking directly at what the manufacturer says, like their technical documentation, their go-to-market positioning, their operating instructions.
Precisely. If the manufacturer designs and markets the AI specifically to fulfill a safety function, meaning its stated job is to prevent or mitigate harm to human health, safety, or property, then it is legally a safety component. The intent locks them into that classification.
Okay, the source material provides a really clear example of this in a manufacturing setting. Imagine an AI computer vision system installed on a factory floor, right?
Yeah.
In the technical documentation, the manufacturer states the AI is designed to monitor a robotic arm's workspace. And if a human worker crosses into that zone, the AI is programmed to trigger an immediate emergency safety stop.
Right. That is a classic preventative safety function clearly stated by the creator.
It's hired to do safety.
Exactly. Another excellent example involves ATEX equipment.
Remind us what that is.
These are highly regulated devices used in explosive atmospheres. Think chemical processing plants or underground mines.
Okay, high stakes.
Very. So if a company integrates an AI system to actively monitor gas concentrations, and its stated purpose is to command an automatic shutdown of machinery before an explosion threshold is reached, that is a mitigating safety function. The explicit documented intent is to save lives and property.
But the guidelines draw a pretty hard line between safety and just, like, optimization.
Right. They do. The guidelines heavily contrast these safety functions with AI intended merely for performance optimization, service efficiency, or user comfort.
So if it's just saving money.
Right. If an algorithm is just dynamically adjusting the power consumption of a machine to save electricity, its intended purpose is financial efficiency, not physical safety.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because if the safety function label relies so heavily on the manufacturer's stated intent, isn't that a massive vulnerability in the law?
How do you mean?
What stops a company from engaging in regulatory arbitrage? Could a clever tech company build an AI emergency brake for a piece of industrial machinery, but deliberately rewrite their technical documentation?
Ah, I see what you're saying.
Like they just say, oh, this AI is not for safety. It is merely designed to optimize stopping distance for operational efficiency. Can they just manipulate the semantics of their manual to dodge the high-risk label?
It's a great point, and the European Commission fully anticipated that exact loophole.
They saw it coming.
Oh, yeah. They knew that if the law only looked at stated intent, manufacturers would simply lawyer their way out of the safety component definition. Which brings us to the second pathway detailed in the draft guidelines.
Okay, the backup plan.
Yes. We can call this the failure or malfunctioning pathway, and it completely ignores the manufacturer's technical documentation. It is an entirely risk-based legal safety net.
So this pathway evaluates what happens when the system breaks down in the real world, regardless of what the marketing brochure says.
Exactly. Even if a manufacturer insists their AI is strictly for convenience or process optimization, the law dictates that if the failure or malfunction of that AI system endangers health, safety, or property, it is legally automatically classified as a safety component.
And endangerment is a highly specific threshold here.
Mm.
As lawyer Kung Jin Kim points out in the material, we aren't talking about a company losing data or suffering reputational damage or just pure financial loss.
No, not at all.
Endangerment means physically increasing a hazard.
Right. It means creating a scenario that actively leads to physical harm. It could mean causing a vehicle to crash, forcing a machine to operate outside its safe physical parameters, or actively preventing a protective response from deploying when it actually should.
The vehicle example in the text is perfect for illustrating this. So imagine an automotive manufacturer deploys an autonomous lane assistance AI.
Okay.
In their technical documentation, they explicitly state the AI is not a safety feature. They say it is strictly intended to improve driving comfort and reduce driver fatigue.
Right, optimization and comfort.
Right. If we only had that first pathway, they would completely avoid the high-risk label. But if that lane assistance AI glitches, misreads the road, and unexpectedly swerves the vehicle into oncoming traffic, it is physically endangering lives.
And in that moment, the outcome of the failure supersedes the manufacturer's intent entirely. The law reclassifies it as a safety component.
Wow.
Yeah, another stark example from the sources is in the agricultural sector. Say a company deploys an AI-powered drone to optimize chemical spraying on crops. The stated intent is purely economic, right? Save the farmer money on pesticides by only spraying exactly where needed.
Makes sense.
But if the computer vision system fails to distinguish between a crop and a human farm worker, and it ends up spraying the worker with toxic chemicals, that failure creates a severe health hazard.
So it's a safety component.
Exact.
So it's basically like hiring a lifeguard versus the structural beam of a swimming pool.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah, the first pathway is the lifeguard. You hire them specifically to monitor the water and save lives. They're in intended documented job is safety.
Right.
The second pathway is the structural steel beam holding up the concrete of the pool. It wasn't hired to actively save lives. Its stated purpose is just to hold up concrete. But if that beam breaks and the pool collapses, people are in immediate physical danger. Either way, the EU is watching both.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize it. Whether you intend to protect people or your failure endangers them, you meet the definition of a safety component.
Okay, but we have to remember, that is only the first cumulative condition under Article 6, Paragraph 1.
Right. Getting labeled a safety component is only half the equation.
Exactly. To actually trigger the full high-risk classification, the AI system has to overcome the second hurdle.
The product it is integrated into must also require a third-party conformity assessment under the EU's existing harmonization laws.
This is where we get into the actual nuts and bolts of how the EU polices its internal market. The new legislative framework, and these conformity assessment modules. How does a manufacturer actually prove their product is safe enough to sell in Europe?
So the new legislative framework utilizes a modular approach to conformity assessment, literally lettered from Module A all the way through Module H. And these modules dictate the level of scrutiny a product requires based on its inherent risk profile.
Right.
Now, Module A is the baseline. It represents internal control of production, which is essentially self-certification.
So for a low-risk product, the manufacturer compiles their own technical documentation, signs a piece of paper swearing it's safe, slaps a CE mark on it, and ships it out.
Basically, yeah.
They don't have to hire an external auditor.
Correct. And typically, if a product only requires Module A, it fails the second condition of the AI Act. Because there is no legal requirement for a third-party assessment, the AI inside that product dodges the high-risk classification.
But the commentary provided by lawyer Kyung-Jin Kim highlights a massive caveat to this rule, because self-certification isn't always just a blank check.
It's really not. And this is where the legal mechanics get fascinating. In several EU product safety laws, the legislators allow a manufacturer to use Module A to self-certify, but only if they strictly adhere to what is known as a harmonized standard.
Okay, what exactly is a harmonized standard in this context?
It is a highly specific, recognized technical specification that is published in the official journal of the European Union.
Like an engineering blueprint.
Exactly. It's a blueprint that the EU has essentially blessed. If a manufacturer builds their product precisely according to that standard, they receive a presumption of conformity. They are allowed to self-certify because they followed the EU's exact recipe.
But if they deviate from that recipe, or say, if no harmonized standard exists for their specific cutting-edge product yet, they are forced to hire a notified body.
Right, an external third-party auditor to thoroughly examine the product.
And this creates a very interesting trigger for the AI Act. The draft guidelines clarify that if an older EU law demands the use of a harmonized standard as a strict condition for allowing self-certification, that legal demand itself acts as a proxy for risk.
Yes. The text uses connected toys under the toy safety regulation to illustrate this.
Oh, right. Let's walk through that.
So let's say a company is manufacturing a connected toy that uses AI. The manufacturer wants to use Module A to self-certify, which obviously saves them the immense cost and time of hiring an external notified body.
Sure. Every business wants to save money.
Right. The toy's safety regulation allows them to do this, provided they fully apply the relevant harmonized standard for toy safety.
So wait, what does this all mean? They follow the standard, they self-certify, and they avoid the third-party auditor. Do they also avoid the high-risk AI label?
No, they do not. And this is the critical insight from the guidelines. The EU's logic is that the very fact the underlying product law requires that strict level of scrutiny, either follow the exact standard or get audited, that proves the product category poses a significant risk to the public interest.
So the manufacturer's procedural choice doesn't dictate the risk.
Exactly.
The lawmakers have already decided the toy is risky enough to warrant strict oversight, and the AI Act just inherits that classification.
Yes. The legal demand for enhanced scrutiny means the AI safety component inside that toy is automatically classified as high risk under Article 6.1, regardless of whether the manufacturer ultimately utilized an external auditor or a harmonized standard.
This reveals so much about the Commission's strategy here. I mean, for a listener who might be building a startup right now, this means the EU is effectively outsourcing the definition of high risk to older existing product laws.
Pretty much.
The AI Act is just piggybacking on the safety rules we already have for elevators, pressure equipment, toys.
It is a deeply pragmatic approach. The European Commission understands that AI does not operate in a digital vacuum, right? It interacts with the physical world through physical machinery.
Right.
By anchoring the AI Act to the existing harmonization laws, they prevent massive regulatory contradictions. The AI Act does not expand the scope of which physical products are regulated. It merely injects a new layer of AI-specific safety requirements into the products that European law has already deemed dangerous enough to require strict oversight.
Which naturally brings up a major concern for the tech industry, right?
Yeah.
The compliance burden.
Oh, absolutely.
If a manufacturer already spends millions of dollars and years of time proving their medical device is safe under the medical device regulation, and now this new framework determines their AI component is high risk under the AI Act, I mean, they are staring down the barrel of dual regulations.
Double the paperwork.
Double the paperwork. Double the audits. Conflicting regulatory demands. How does the EU justify that friction?
Well, they don't justify it. They actually built mechanisms to prevent it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The draft guidelines detail how Articles 8, 9, and 17 of the AI Act are engineered specifically to minimize this exact compliance nightmare for economic operators.
How does that actually function mechanically? I mean, how do you comply with two massive pieces of legislation without doing double the work?
You integrate them. Any manufacturer building complex regulated products is already legally required to maintain a robust quality management system, or QMS.
Right, quality control.
But this isn't just a binder of policies. It is an audited, rigorous system of testing, risk management, and quality control. The AI Act allows companies to fold their new AI-specific risk assessments directly into those existing quality management systems.
Okay, so instead of building a completely parallel bureaucracy just for the AI Act, you simply expand your existing safety checks.
Exactly. You are already testing the physical safety of the medical device. Now, within that same QMS framework, you add the AI-specific requirements. You implement testing for data poisoning. You validate the training data for bias. You ensure the cybersecurity of the AI model against adversarial attacks.
So this is about a single compliance framework.
Yes, the goal is unified compliance. The EU demands a high level of protection for health, safety, and fundamental rights, but they are deliberately avoiding forcing a company to undergo two entirely separate, redundant audits for the exact same physical machine.
And that is a vital takeaway for you listening. Whether you are an engineer writing code, an investor, or just a consumer, this shows the EU's intent. They aren't trying to break the tech industry. They're trying to seamlessly weave AI safety requirements into the existing fabric of industrial safety standards.
It is about modernization, not duplication. The framework respects the established safety protocols of the internal market and simply upgrades them for the algorithmic age.
So let's run through the critical takeaways here to lock in these concepts. Based on these draft guidelines, and again, leaning on the excellent analysis provided by lawyer Seungjin Kim, the EU's approach to classifying high-risk AI under Article 6.1 is incredibly targeted.
Highly targeted.
Your AI system only faces the heavy burden of high-risk regulation if it meets two strict cumulative conditions. First, it must act as a safety component. That happens either because your technical documentation states its intended purpose is safety or because its real-world failure physically endangers people or property.
And second, that AI safety component must be integrated into a product that is already regulated by EU harmonization laws that demand a third-party conformity assessment. If you fail to meet either of those conditions, your AI system avoids the high-risk classification under this specific section.
It provides a level of clarity that the tech industry has been honestly desperate for.
Yeah.
But as we close, there's an underlying friction in this framework that is really worth mulling over.
Yeah, there's a big philosophical question here.
Right. The entire legal structure we've explored today is fundamentally anchored in two concepts: the manufacturer's intended purpose and the engineering concept of reasonably foreseeable failures.
Which works for traditional machines.
Exactly. We are actively projecting current deterministic engineering logic onto future technology. We are assuming we can predict how the machine will break.
But the defining characteristic of advanced artificial intelligence is its ability to learn and adapt. As we move toward highly autonomous, self-learning AI systems, I mean, systems that might rewrite their own operational parameters, or optimize in ways the engineers never anticipated, or discover novel methods to operate a machine months or years after deployment,
the concept of foreseeable risk just begins to completely break down.
It does. How long can a static legal framework based entirely on human-defined intent and predictable failure modes successfully govern a technology designed specifically to outgrow its initial programming?
When the system learns to execute a task in a way the manufacturer never even dreamed of, the technical documentation essentially becomes obsolete. It is a massive, unresolved question for the future of regulation, something for you to explore on your own. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems around you, and we'll catch you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.